Good morning. It's Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. This is Tech Talk Today, episode 234. No, that's not possible. That is not possible. But yet somehow it is. My name is Chris. Hey there, Ange.
And I'm Angela.
Hello, Angela.
Hello.
Hi. How you doing today?
I'm all right.
Well, good. Good. I'm glad to hear that because today is one of three shows for me. That's what this episode is right here. One of three shows today. I got
Tech Talk today.
Mm-hmm. Then I got the Linux Unplugged.
The
big show. We're gonna be talking Raspberry Pi 3, a couple other things we've been talking about. We got a good show coming up there. And then
some politics.
Unfilter is gonna be covering Super Tuesday Live Skis. So if you're listening to this now and want to join us for our meta coverage of that, that'll be on jblive.tv. But let's get into the news. Let's bring in that Mumble Room. Time appropriate greetings, Mumble Room.
Hello, people.
Okay, so let's talk about the big news this morning. In fact, we haven't even really had a chance to talk about this story since Tech Talk's been on the air, but you guys are all very familiar now with Apple and their battle with the FBI and the DOJ about unlocking one of the San Bernardino shooter's phones. There is a passcode on there. If you put 10 invalid passcodes in there, it wipes the phone. You're probably familiar with this.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know it's also his work phone?
Oh,
he had
I didn't.
A personal phone, and they destroyed their personal phones.
Oh, is the San Bernardino? Which one is that?
That was a shooting down in San Bernardino where they went in and shot up like their coworkers.
Oh, right.
You remember that? Yeah.
Yes.
And then they went on. They ran. And,
That was a very suspicious story.
Well, it's very sad, and what's really odd about this is the FBI is trying so hard to go after what is essentially their work phone. But there was a major legal victory for Apple today, and John Gruber over at Daring Fireball has been doing a good job of finding the best coverage and linking to it. So he's kind of doing like meta coverage and it's been great. So I wanted to cover a couple of these things because I think it's a pretty big win for Apple today. In fact, Gruber calls it a major court victory. So the judge applied previous legal decisions interpreting the All Writs Act, which is like a 1789 law. Did you know that?
Wow.
That's the law they're using to do this?
Yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And back then, when the All Writs Act was written, the U.S. law structure was very new, and it was still very much forming, and they needed something they could just sort of patch things over with until they had all the different laws in place. Mm-hmm. And so they wrote the All Writs Act. And so there's a lot of different ways you can interpret something like that. The judge looked at it and concluded that the law does not justify imposing on Apple the obligation to assist in the government's investigation against its will. In a formulation extremely favorable to Apple, the judge wrote that the key question raised by the government's request is whether the All Writs Act allows a court to compel Apple, a private party with no alleged involvement in the criminal activity, to perform work for the government against its will. The court ruled that the law has no such permission, both because relevant law contains limits on what companies like Apple are required to do and because Congress never enacted any such obligations.
Ouch! Ouch!
Moreover, the judge said the government's arguments of how the All Writs Act should be applied, quote, the implications of the government's positions are so far-reaching, both in terms of what it would allow today and what it implies about congressional intent in 1789, as to produce an impermissibly absurd result. So this is great news for Apple in such that the first sort of legal hurdle has been a win for them.
With something from the 1700s. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes. Yeah. And here's why. So a lot of people said, oh, this is a big marketing thing for Apple. Some people have said that. Other people have said this is about encryption. It's not really about any of these things. It's actually about establishing a precedent. So if the FBI is able to establish a precedent,
yes,
that's why this matters, because it would apply to any phone.
Yep. And that's I had a feeling that that was the direction it was going to go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's to normalize that our data is not our data. And
of course, it's no accident that it's the San Bernardino shooting is the case that they're using. And I mean, it is literally no accident that was very intentionally chosen, because it has come out from the legal filings from Apple, from their general counsel. It has come out that there's 175 phones that are waiting
for this bust
after this.
Oh, my gosh. Well, OK, well, that makes it seem a little less.
It's not about one phone.
But yeah.
It's about establishing a precedent.
Wow. Yes. Wow.
And then once that precedent is established, they will start using that precedent to get access to these phones.
Of course.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's a good first blow for in this case. I mean, it's a good win for Apple. Mumble Room, any thoughts?
No, it's pretty much all about precedent, as you said. So, I mean, it's pretty much what this is about.
It'd be interesting to see how long this takes.
You know, I wonder, there's going to be, you know, people on two major camps. The one will be all the people that are like, yeah, my data is my data. And then there's another group that's going to be like, but we need to find out why the killers did it.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And I don't know. There's not going to be. See, I think most people realize there's not going to be anything on that iPhone. That's the super unfortunate part is if they were successful and got access to the iPhone, there's really nothing on there.
Yeah.
So they had access to their iCloud backup from 6 weeks ago, which revealed nothing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason why they didn't have a more current backup is because the way the iPhone works is you have to have it plugged in on Wi-Fi. And if it's plugged in and on Wi-Fi, it'll back up if it's on a known Wi-Fi network. However, once the FBI and the San Bernardino, I think it was like an environmental agency that they worked for that the iPhone was from. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly. Once all of this went down and custody was claimed over items and things like that, the FBI had the San Bernardino sheriff or police department, I can't remember now, try to reset the iCloud password.
Ah.
To try to get access to there, I guess. But once you reset the iCloud password, the phone won't back up until you've re-logged into the phone. So if they would have just taken the phone, plugged it in, and put it on the work network that the phone is on a known Wi-Fi network, and not touched anything, they would have gotten
most current stuff. That's interesting.
And on top of that, I looked into this. There's no difference in what you get in an iCloud backup versus pulling it over the wire using a dump to iTunes or an extraction tool. The facilities that the iPhone operating system uses to perform the iCloud backup or the dump over a wire are the same exact facilities. So you lose some temporary state when you do this backup. Like you lose like Telegram's data and you lose WhatsApp's data and Facebook. You lose those cache stores that applications have on the local device. You get the binaries and you get some of the settings, but you lose the cache. So even if they can download this phone, It will be bit for bit identical to what they've gotten in iCloud. However, the benefit to getting it from iCloud for them, they can do that with a warrant to Apple. They don't need access to the phone. So they can just go to Apple and say, hey, give us the data. And iCloud stores iterations of the phone backup. So you can actually step through the changes that the suspect made on their phone. Maybe they were trying to clear their tracks, right? Mm-hmm. So they start deleting web history and start deleting text messages. iCloud has incremental backups of the phone, so you could just go back a few days before they deleted those text messages.
Right.
So iCloud is actually a better, easier, softer target for them to go after.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then people don't back up, so they want this precedent. And it's just, they just happen to change the password to break the backup, and so they had to force their hand. And yeah, it's an interesting story. We'll see where it goes. I don't think it's done yet. Let's talk about Microsoft just for a second. They have a new product they want you to buy, Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. It uses cloud power.
I need that.
Yeah, it's going to use cloud power to figure out if you've been pwned.
There's a stocking stuffer.
Uh-huh, yeah. What you do is you install it on your network. You have it monitoring your network. You have it monitoring all your servers. You have it monitoring all your systems.
Oh, my gosh.
And then it's going to go ahead and report back to Microsoft Cloud. And then they're going to use that data to see if you've been compromised because they're going to look at everybody else's cloud data and draw analytics.
Wow. You know, that just sounds like one of the managed services that IT companies provide, you know?
Yeah, that is.
Like, it's just rebranded. What was it called?
Oh, what was that called that we sold?
Start of the P.
Did it?
I don't know.
It was a big enterprise grade monitoring system that you could like sub brand and whatnot. I can't remember the name of it. But
I was thinking of Postini.
Oh, yeah.
But that was just email.
And remember Intermedia Exchange?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Microsoft does that now, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man, are people really going to buy that?
Well, you know, if it depends. If you're a Microsoft shop and you're super worried about cybersecurity and you need to demonstrate to somebody in your organization that you are on top of cybersecurity, you're not going to get fired for going with the Microsoft-powered cloud solution.
Well, that's true.
Right?
So it's a CYA purchase.
I think it is.
Wow.
I think Microsoft sells
a lot
of that.
All you guys, all you server guys and gals, go ahead and get it.
Maybe I'm wrong.
It'd be like,
I've not been impressed by Microsoft's border edge/edge products for years. I never have.
Frame the license. Been trying them. Cubicle.
I've been trying out Microsoft's network security products literally since before NT4. and they've never stacked up. They've never been worth it. They've always been rigid in their implementation. And Windows Defender itself doesn't have a great track record. I don't mean to hate. I'm sorry. I'm just saying what I've observed over the years. I don't know. Maybe somebody in the Mumble Room could deploy it on their network and let us know how it goes. Yeah. And if you're not up for that, how about this one more Microsoft story? How about the $3,000 HoloLens dev kit available for pre-order now? It should be March 30th.
What? Because you scroll down?
Yeah, there it is, Ange. There it is. You see that right there? What you get here is you get yourself the augmented reality goggles. You get yourself a carrying case.
Meh.
A charger for $3,000.
What are they doing? What?
It's got 2 gigabytes of RAM in there, 60 hertz refresh rate, an x86 little machine, a 2 megapixel camera, a holographic processing unit, which appears to be only a 32-bit chip, oddly enough, Bluetooth 4.1, 802.11ac, 2 USB connections, 64 gigabytes of onboard storage, battery life estimated to be about 2 to 3 hours of active use, almost 2 pounds.
Anybody in the Mumble Room willing to fork over the dough for that?
Yep.
What about if it got down to $300? Would you try it? You know, like the 2-year mark or like when they have a... Because this isn't a consumer product. This is for developers. And when I'm saying developers, I'm thinking it's like your game shops out there. Right?
Yeah, I guess so.
At this price, that's what that's for. It's a dev kit.
Can I take a Minecraft pickaxe to my wall?
Yes. Somebody out there, like, let's just say I was Notch, right? I'm Notch. I got some cash and I want to see what Minecraft would be like in augmented reality. Mm-hmm. I'd buy that. I would buy that. Here's what I'm more excited about, and this is why I'm kind of muted about it. Skooky Sprite is also pretty excited about this. He's been tweeting me about this. The Vive pre-orders are on sale now. Now, Vive pre-orders is HTC and Valve working together in a kumbaya style, Ange. And they've made some people are saying the most impressive virtual reality system with 2 clickers.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and it still kind of looks like an alien on your face, but it's pretty neat, and it's supposed to be one of the best implementations with one of the best graphics. So, I think the HTC Vive here might be on. I think this might be something. But right now, here's the downside: pre-order, although you get a whole bunch of stuff with it, including a nice microfiber carrying bag.
Ooh.
Yeah. But it's like you have to have just a monster PC. You have to have like ton of GPU power, at least comparatively to anything I have right now. Some of you may already have the system requirements, but they do have a PC checker that you can download. But the buzz on this is good, and the fact that they're working, the Vive is in combination with Valve, aka Steam, means you're going to have a pretty straightforward way to get your games with on a platform you likely already have an account on. They already have your information, and you likely semi-trust them.
And there likely would be more than just like one game that you could play?
It's funny.
Or
I already have two.
Two what?
Games.
Two VR sets too, right?
No. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I know you do.
I have the Oculus and the Galaxy VR. But what I mean is two of the games I've bought in the past just became VR games.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they've added VR already.
Nice.
I don't think this is going to work with... So here's... Let's see what the system requirements are. All right. Okay. Let's see here. Hardware specs. We don't need that. We need... Where's the system requirements at? About this hardware. Well, I'm not seeing that. It's pretty high-end specs. But so it's... Oh, yeah. Did I mention that $799? Did I mention that part?
It's only $799.
What do you mean only?
Well, compared to $3,000, and this seems more of conclusive.
Yeah, yeah, that's
set.
That's a good. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I'm looking for the.
That was not an authorization to buy.
Okay, and purchase. Yeah. Yes. Woo! Okay, you guys, heard everybody. You heard it.
No.
Okay, here's the recommended PC specs: a GTX 970. Which is a pretty badass video card, or a Radeon R9 290. You got to have an i5 or AMD FX 8350 CPU, 4 gigabytes of RAM. Okay, that's no big D's. HDMI 1.4 out or DisplayPort. I already see I don't have a spare HDMI port, so that would be a bummer. And you need to have one USB 2.0 port. And the part I don't like, you need to run Windows. Yeah, that's the other thing I'm not super jazzed about because I got VR games.
Yeah,
yeah. So I'm going to basically jump on whoever goes with the Linux support first. The download for the software is 4 gigabytes alone. Have you been playing with the WW, or you just noticed that?
No, I just noticed that because I'm like, I want to try to install this and see if my system's ready at all, since I'm currently on Windows, but I'm not taking the whole Windows thing either.
So those of you listening, WW wrote in the chat room that the download for the software is 4 gigabytes alone.
4 gigabytes. 4 gigabytes. And yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of...
That's a lot.
Well, the future is big. The future is real big. All right. So it's all the news today. And I don't know if I don't know if there's like a... the press just loves it. Loves it when Google has something going wrong with the self-driving cars. So we have our first self-driving car accident from Google where it looks like it might not be the other driver's fault. It might be the car's fault.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. The computer might have messed up. A self-driving car being tested by Google struck a public bus on a Silicon Valley street. It's just a bit of a fender bender.
Is there video of it?
No, not that I've seen yet.
How did a Google car not have video in it?
Well, Google's probably got video. Absolutely. I guarantee you they do. So here's the conditions, though. It's not that bad. The Lexus, they're testing in a Lexus. I'd like to know how that came about. That company's rich. Anyways, they were going 2 miles per hour during the collision. They were just coming over, and I guess Goog says, and the driver, because they don't call it a driver, though. They call it an attendant. An attendant in the car said that when he saw the bus, he was watching. He's like, oh, I'm sure they're going to slow down. And the bus didn't slow down. And this is where Chris takes a side moment. Just a sidebar really quick. All you bastards out there on the road, you need to understand that these large vehicles, they don't slow down that fast. And so I wonder if like maybe RVs have like an invisibility cloak. Like once I go up to 55 miles per hour, like does my entire RV disappear off the road and you guys just can't see it? So people like they don't want to be behind an RV or a bus. Right. And so they speed up and they try to get in front of you. But then like
they slow down.
Well, one of the things you do when you're driving a really large vehicle is because you're up very high, like so the roof of other cars are at my ass.
Uh-huh.
So that I'm up way above everybody else. So I can see way down the road. And so sometimes I start seeing cars, you know, doing the ass up in the air braking thing. So I start backing way off, and it creates a gap.
Yeah.
Well, then somebody's like, oh, there's a spot. I better jump in there. Let me get that spot.
Yeah,
the
gap.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, they've taken away all my buffer space. So now I'm, like, downshifting and hitting the brakes. And it's like, you know, just pay attention to that kind of stuff. And so I'm sure that same driver is like, oh, that bus will just slow down. Well, guess what? It takes a while to slow that thing down, so... I don't know. People need to give those things a wider berth, in my opinion. And I think the Google car, even though it's supposed to drive very conservatively, people say, still did a little sideswipey. The bus is going about 15 miles per hour. And Google said in a written statement, we clearly bear some responsibility because if our car hadn't moved, there wouldn't have been a collision. Yes, Google.
That is correct.
That is correct. But they say it is not black and white. It's not a black and white case.
Right. It is a white car.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a black and white case.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Anybody in the mumble room, if Google called you up this afternoon and said, hello, we are expanding our self-driving program, and we have noticed based on your internet activity that you may be a candidate for something like this. Would you be interested in Google loaning you a car for a month? Now, I'm asking you, mumble room. Google calls you up and they say, we're going to offer you a car for a month. We'll drive you. It'll have an internet connection with Wi-Fi. You just get in. Everything will connect. We're going to get you a nice fatty connection while you're on the road. And we're going to drive you back and forth to work for a month. Would you do it? If starting tomorrow.
I would totally do it.
Oh, heck yes.
Would you do it, Ange?
With a helmet.
I would absolutely do it, too.
Yeah, no, I totally would.
I would. I mean, why not?
I would get so. I'm driving, like, I think 10 hours a week now, driving Dylan to the clinic every day.
Yep.
Or almost every day. Yeah, no, I would love to be able to do other things.
I know, right?
Right?
Ugh.
Says the two self-employed people, you know? Like, we have so much time wasted driving.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's, you know, that's a big reason why I have... So a podcast, or like a big part of why I listen to podcasts while I'm driving, because I feel like, well, at least I'm kind of engaged in a subject that I can turn into, you know, something else.
Knowledge bank.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm knowledge banking it. So anyways, I like this. So Google's actually, do you know what, Ange? It's actually had nearly a dozen collisions.
Oh.
Yeah, a dozen collisions in and around the Mountain View.
That was a cute little bell.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. But in all cases, Google's cars... were rear-ended and no one was seriously injured.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But this is the first one that it hit another.
Yeah. And now, you know, when you get a dozen accidents and they're rear endings, you're starting to wonder maybe if it's breaking a little weird.
Hard, or, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I got rear-ended one time, and they're like, no, it's your fault. And I'm like, what? Ugh. You just never know. You never know. Ange, this just got my nostalgia bone going. Okay. You remember old floppy disks, like the 3.5-inch floppy disks that weren't actually floppy?
I still have them with all my love letters to you on them.
You won't be able to read them, I don't think.
I know. I don't know how. I know. I might as well just get rid of them.
Like I think the magnetics kind of go out after
though.
A while. Yeah, floppy disks. Wow. Yeah, we had cool labels, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had a cool Star Trek box that I put floppy disks in.
I saw that in the garage yesterday.
That was cool. So this modder has put together a 128-gigabyte floppy disk that actually works.
Ah,
the floppy
cool.
might be dead. But that didn't stop one clever hacker. It's funny that you call this a hacker. But anyway, well, I guess this is actually more genuinely use of the word. For modifying a floppy drive to read a multi-gigabyte SD card, he actually got the whole damn thing working.
Wow.
Yeah, so it even actually shows up as
So does it read the data that was on the floppy, or
no,
it's just a new storage?
It's replacing the...
Interesting.
But the cool part of it is I think he also modded the drive aspect of it, too.
He must have.
So yeah, he puts the floppy disk in the drive. And then when he goes into he's got like a Windows Explorer up here. When he goes into Windows Explorer, it shows up there. Was that porn he had on the screen? It shows up there as the A drive, 3.5-inch floppy disk A drive.
Wow.
118 gigabytes free of 118 gigabytes.
Wow.
Now I got to back up. Was that porn? Oh, come on now. No, I don't think that's porn. I don't think that's porn. But yeah, okay. So anyways, let's continue on. So there's the floppy disk right there in my computer. And he can read and write to it. See, look, the floppy drive even lights up. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. He had a folder called WTF lol.
That's good. And then there he shows the SD card.
That is so cool.
And he put a black one in there so it even all matches the black floppy drive.
And it just comes right out.
I want a reader like that.
That is so crazy.
Isn't that awesome? It's a great idea. I thought that was particularly neat. Okay, Ange, so as we round out this week's episode of the Tech Talk Today program, we got to open up the Kickstarter segment. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, let's kick it.
Kick it!
Woo!
Now, this week, we thought we'd do a little follow-up on a Kickstarter. You know, we're changing it up from time to time, and if we're going to talk about a Kickstarter every now and then, we ought to go back and see how they did.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, we're following up on what seemed like a brilliant idea.
I really thought Chris was going to buy it.
Well, and you remember, it was like in the prime of summer.
It was.
I just got in a tent.
Yes.
Which is awesome. Which is also a Kickstarter from this show.
Yeah.
And so I did not back this one, although I kind of wanted to at the time, but I did not back it. Let's check in, see how they did, Ange. It is the cool chest, the coolest cooler ever from Kickstarter, and it just ran out of cash.
Yeah, it raised $13 million.
Yeah.
But they're finding that they can't actually fill the orders now.
This happens, right? I mean, this sort of reminds me of the story with the Librem.
Yeah.
So, you know, things change. You know, it's like you get in there and you realize, oh, gosh, this is really difficult. This is way harder, or something doesn't work out, doesn't play through.
Yeah. So it's basically it's a cooler that has like a cup holder and USB ports.
And Bluetooth for like speakers and stuff. So it's like it's got like solar. You could get the solar option so it would charge your devices.
Utility cooler.
Yeah, it was like a portable stereo, Bluetooth stereo with solar charging option.
Party in a box.
Party in a box. Just needed party mode lights.
Yeah, right. Man, we should follow up on those.
I know. I do want those, actually. That's a bummer.
Crazy. So they're still trying to fulfill the orders. They're seeking investors.
Yeah.
I don't know that our audience would be the investors. You know, like, I don't think they're looking for, like, another Kickstarter. I think they're looking for somebody to come in with, like, some dough. But, yeah.
Yeah, I remember talking about this now, and it's kind of... Yeah, there's a slot for the phone. They got a slot for the speaker right there. It was a cool idea.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of a cooler you get with the solar option, you could plug a few things in to have a charge stuff. That'd be pretty neat, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That will bring us to the end of this week's episode of Tech Talk Today. Now, I'm just trying to think, was there any kind of networky kind of news bulletins we need to get out there before we wrap up? Anything we need to pass along?
Double Tech Snap this week.
Oh, yeah, that is good to know. Double Tech Snap on the live stream because Alan's going to be traveling. We got Linux Fest Northwest coming up at the end of April. And if you are maybe considering coming out, we would encourage you to do so. Come hang out with us. Hoping to have a pretty good showing at the booth.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a booth space that you can come say hi. I don't know if we're going to, you know, we should talk about maybe ways of changing that up so we have like time, like maybe a room to do the Linux Action Show in or something.
I applied for that last year and they declined.
Oh, we should talk to them about it. So what the problem is I think they like us doing the show on the floor, but then people don't know where to come and where to go and where to sit.
Well, and they wanted a talk to be in the room,
If they have a – well, no, I was thinking we'd actually
I know. Yeah, I know
something.
What you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, we could do that. All right. Well, let's mention the Patreon, patreon.com/today is where you go to fund all kinds of endeavors for the network. It's not just about this show.
Nope.
This show is a thank you for those of you out there that took the time to support us. And it's also a place where we can go, please, please support us. We have a lot of big things we want to do. And I think we're going to double down probably on this after Linux Fest on the Patreon page.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to, like, we, you know, really everything. New milestones, new descriptions, new video, everything.
Overhaul.
Overhaul the whole thing. It's just, it'd be disingenuous to try to do it right now when in a couple of weeks we're going to be so overwhelmed with Linux Fest that this would just go on the back burner anyway. So I say, after Linux Fest, this is kind of our next milestone post. Mm-hmm. Internal thing we're going to go after.
Everybody for February, their cards are being charged today.
Yes.
And for the swag level members, they will be, I will be working on the swag. It'll be coming out in the next week or so.
Cool. Yeah. Patreon.com/today to support this show and other endeavors on the Jupiter Broadcasting Network.
Yep. And if you're an Unfilter fan or more of, and you want to support that one, you can do patreon.com/.
Unfilter.
Yeah.
And that show is a beast, so we have a separate Patreon going for that because it is. I mean, it's like
And they're also getting swag, swag level members.
Yes, this afternoon is going to be a good example. It's just a wild, fun show. It's like nothing else we do. It really
wow.
is.
Well, if it's your cup of tea, because it really...
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, you know, there's more and more things out there that apply to. We also we've been covering pretty extensively the Apple and FBI case in Unfilter.
Oh.
And what we try to do with some of that stuff is we try to put some of the more technical topics towards the top of the show. So that way people don't, if they don't want to go all the way off into like the terrorism politics and stuff like that, they don't have to listen to all that stuff.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good for people to hear.
I don't overtly mention it, but that's
how I know.
I just did.
Yeah.
I just did.
I don't always, but I just did.
That's how I intentionally structured it. So that way if people wanted to, they could catch the first bit of technical stuff in the show. And then I'm hoping they'll stick around. I'm hoping they get engaged and stick around. But maybe they don't.
Yeah.
All right, Mumble Room, thank you for being here. We'd like to encourage you to join us live and hang out in our Mumble Room. Go over to jblive.tv on a Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. Go to jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar to get that converted to your local time zone. You know where else people could go? Subreddit.
Yes.
Yeah. techtalktoday.reddit.com. That subreddit. Thanks, you guys, for helping. Like, today I got in here. I'm like, okay, I got everything. I think I got all the stories. Okay, I can breathe. And I cracked open my Starbucks refresher. And went over to the Tech Talk Today subreddit and grabbed a couple of more links that sort of filled out a few things. It was a real nice compliment. And it was interesting to see what you guys have been following since we weren't able to be here last week because Rika was gone. He's back now, though. So Tech Talk Today is back. Okay, thanks for joining us. I'll leave you with a funny bit from IBM. You know, they've done some great commercials over the years. And this one's called Coping with Humans. Kind of fitting. See you back here next week, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
After last week's unpleasantness, I thought maybe this week we might try to listen more and throw things less.
I've apologized several times.
So, who's ready to share?
Okay. I mean, I'm a sinister, world-conquering, artificially intelligent robot.
Me too. And one day I wake up and it's like...
It's like the world doesn't need us anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
I can hear you hurting.
Wait, what's he doing here?
Hello. My name is Watson.
I invite Watson here today to confront the source of our anxiety.
I am a cognitive system. I can understand, reason, and learn with humans.
With humans.
I don't want to work with humans.
Yeah, that's not what I'm passionate about.
I understand 7 languages, so I can help people collaborate.
Collaborate? We dominate.
My evil plans ruined.
I just want to die.
Rerouting.
No.
All right. Why don't we take a break? All right, we'll just have some coffee and some donuts.
I'm eating my feelings.